So welcome this morning. My name is Andy. I'm a member here at the church. And at the moment, I am doing some work for the Church of England for different dioceses. We're part of the Diocese of Southwark here, and so it means I've been travelling around the Church of England a little bit, visiting different places. And last Sunday night, I had to travel off via Birmingham, and I had to change trains quite late in Birmingham and then get another train from Birmingham off somewhere else. And as I got there, I was quite tired. It had been quite a long day. It was already quite late. And I had downloaded a film to my iPad. And for the final leg, which was still another 90-minute train journey, I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to watch this film on this train. I got my iPad out under my arm and the headphones kind of hanging down. And it was just a two-carriage train. And I approached it, and it was absolutely packed. I mean, really packed. And it was a kind of, there was a late Sunday night feel to that train, if you know what I mean, as well. That some people had been out and they'd had a good day. There wasn't much room in the train, and I kind of pushed my way down, because actually there were some seats, and you know how those trains have kind of three seats facing each other one side and then two seats facing each other somewhere else. So there were 10 seats across, and I kind of edged towards one seat and kind of implied I'd like to sit there, would you mind moving your stuff? And people had bags everywhere. So these students moved their stuff away and put their big bags on. And I sat there, and I'd got my iPad on my lap, and just at that moment, this huge bloke just emerges out of my right side. Big red hair, big ginger red beard, nothing against that. You know, it's a wonderful colour of hair. If you've still got it, flaunt it. He looked rather nicely, actually, at this seat where there was another big bag. So just across the aisle, but very close to me, especially when you had shoulders the size he did. And kind of, you know, was a bit kind of, you know, do you mind moving that? And he'd had a couple, but was very polite, and then he sat there, and immediately he started engaging the carriage in conversation, forcefully engaging the carriage. But the odd thing was, he was gifted at engaging. I mean, people were laughing, because he was a rugby player. He'd played rugby that day. He'd got a black eye here, where he'd obviously taken quite a big hit, and his opening comment just to this first young person, so where are you from? And you could see the person was like, you know, like that. And he moved around. Then he moved around to the bloke opposite him, who turned out to be Hungarian. He spoke Hungarian to that person, and they had a conversation in Hungarian. And then he explained that whilst being a mental health nurse, he had worked for a while for Habitat for Humanity in Hungary, and whilst there had learned Hungarian. Then he moves around to this, the only other person who was remotely close to my age was this woman sitting opposite me. And you could see she knew her time was coming. As he reached her, you know, she was like rabbit in the headlights. And so he says, so where are you from? What are you doing here? And he was quite, you know, a bit polite, but full. And she said, oh, that's complicated. And I knew that's not going to be good enough for him. I mean, I said, that is not going to do the job here. And he goes, really? Why is it complicated? Are you getting divorced? And I thought, whoa, you know, he's up in the ante here. All the time in the back of my mind, I am thinking, at some point he's coming round to me. And what am I doing here? But on that, and she goes, well, no, but it is complicated. And it's, but I don't think I'm getting divorced. That's my husband just behind me. And she leans over and she goes, are we getting divorced? He pops his head over and, not that I know, darling. Then he goes, so about you then? What about you? To me. And I had my iPad on my lap, and I was just thinking, and I'm heading off to see the Church of England in this diocese, and I was just thinking, at that moment, I've got a choice. Can I invite the kingdom in, or can I put my headphones in? Can I invite the kingdom in, or can I put my headphones in? And at that point, I said, you know what? And actually, it was related to the kind of work I was doing in that diocese. You know, I thought, I'm in. I am in, because Jesus is in for me. And I said, I'm visiting the Church of England in Hereford. And he says, what are you doing? And you could just, at that point, you could hear a pin drop. And everybody just thought, this is going to be really good, because he looks like he's up for it, and he looks like... Nobody put their headphones in. And for the next hour and 10 minutes, we had a fantastic conversation that the whole carriage didn't necessarily join in, but loved hearing, which essentially came down to our views about who Jesus was. And as we look at today's passage, we're in Passion Week. Okay, we see Jesus in this passage entering somewhere where he did not shy away from the situation that was before him. He chose to bring the kingdom in. And I want to talk about three things, okay, that he did. Three things. Just remembering the story, okay, he arrives in the temple, having previously ridden in on a donkey, he arrives in the temple. People are money changing and selling doves for sacrifices, and he just turns over the tables, drives out these money changers, and that makes room for the blind and the lame to come in. In they come, they start being healed, the children start praising God, the priests start saying, can you see what's going on here, Jesus? What are you going to do about it? What is going on here? And Jesus rolls with it, but then the priests are indignant, so actually then Jesus leaves. I want to pull out three things that I felt God spoke to me about for this passage. And I do think, somebody else said this to me, you know, God wants to work, it's Passion Week, he wants to work every day, but he wants to speak to you today. So lean in and respond. Respond like the kids we see in this story, not like the priests. Okay, be prepared to do that as we go through this word. So the first thing about this passage is that he was, so I'm going to say what all three things were. First of all, he was clear. Jesus was clear. He was clear about the purpose of the temple. Okay, so he was clear. Second thing I'm going to say is Jesus confronted. Okay, he confronted the priests and the money changers boldly. Okay, and the third thing is he made a call and people came. He called and they came. Okay, so let's look at that first one, clarity about purpose. And if we could bring up the first slide. Yep, so he was clear about the purpose. I'd ask you, I don't think it's altogether straightforward in this passage. Why does Jesus get so angry about what's going on here? So, what he didn't like, he said, is he didn't like the fact that people had made this, people were buying and selling stuff. And so I don't know whether we've got our fair trade stall over there at the risk of, at the risk of causing a bit of a stir. Should we not be doing that? Should we not be buying and selling fair trade merchandise? And should I be heading over there and turning over that fair trade stall? Is that what this passage is all about? I don't think it is it? So what was it that actually he was so angry about? Well, if you just bring up the next. So what I think he was angry about was that essentially the world's purpose was being carried out in the temple. First of all, convenience was driving how stuff happened in the temple. So in those days, people used to have to buy an animal, a dove or a lamb, they were meant to bring a dove or an animal for sacrifice to pay the price of their sins. And the idea was that actually it was something you did back where you were from. Wherever you were, you got an and you brought it with you. So it was something, and you brought the best of what you had. But for convenience here, what people were actually doing is a load of traders had set up big boxes of doves outside the temple, and they would just sell them to you. So as you're running past, you're on your way, oh, I'll get a quick dove, knock it on its head, take it inside, sacrifice done, ho-ho, I'm forgiven. You know, convenience was taking priority. And of course, you can't see in the yellow box there, it says prophet. The priests were seeing this, those in charge and in authority were seeing this as an opportunity to make a bit of money. You know what, actually, this is, you know, we could really get some money from this. Let's sell lots of doves, let's get these guys in, and then we can change a bit of money as well. If you know your Reformation history as well, this sort of stuff continued with indulgences. Let's sell people the forgiveness of sins. Let's make money from religion. And all of that is driven by a kind of fleshly, worldly perspective about seeking worldly power. Think about who was in the temple here. I bet the people in it's the traders, the money makers. I'm not having a go at bankers. Lots of my friends are bankers. But it was those people, not those, it was people in there who were after making money. And I suspect they were quite well regarded. They certainly have been influential, worldly people. And that was the purpose of that temple. It was about convenience, it was about profit, and it was about worldly power. And that's why Jesus turned over those tables. And that's why we wouldn't turn over that table. Because what's fair trade about? It's about justice. It's about justice for growers. And that's a spiritual thing. And we are after justice because we are after spiritual power. If you bring up the next little arrow. So what perspective, what purpose was Jesus clear about for the temple? Well, he was clear that actually obedience is more important than sacrifice. So actually, as Christians, doing what Jesus has asked us to do is important. And in that case, obedience, in the little blue box there, it says prayer. He says in the passage, my house, it is written, my house, verse 13, if you've still got it open in front of you, do. It is written, he said to them, my house will be called a house of prayer. Actually, prayer matters. Prayer is our priority. And what that shows in the bottom left there is the priority of the temple is spiritual power. Okay, not worldly power, seeking to, you know, be with the most important people, the most influential. It's spiritual power. And that prayer moves things in the heavenlies. And Jesus walked into that temple and he saw that there was not a focus on spiritual power, on moving people's spirits, on saving souls and being obedient to that requirement. And obedience matters, remember. So John 14:23, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. Obedience is more important than sacrifice and empty rituals. And what happens, you know, the interesting outcome, what happens from both? On the right, to begin with, we had these traders in there, but what happens after Jesus has cleared it out? Suddenly, into the temple, we get the lame, the blind, and children. Not necessarily people we would think, my word, those are the influential people of the time. But spiritually, they were clearly the people who were keyed in to what Jesus was doing. So, so firstly, he was clear about purpose. Secondly, he confronts what's wrong. And he was not, Jesus was not passive in this situation. Now, bear in mind, we often, you know, people talk about meek and mild Jesus. This is not a story of a meek and mild leader. I guess I should balance that by saying he did arrive on a donkey. And also, he had no position or status here to enable him to do what he did. He wasn't the MP. He wasn't the policeman. You know, he wasn't the prince. He had no positional status to mean that he could feel. And quite often, I think, when I see a situation I don't like, when I was on that train, you know, there's a bit of me that does look around and go, God, who's going to sort this out? You know, who's going to, this is could be a bit of, who's going to, but, you know, Jesus didn't have any positional status to mean that he could boldly confront what was going on. But he did boldly confront it. I'd contrast that with my kind of second theme I felt God speaking to me about during this, is that very often in the temple, in the church today, we portray niceness as like the supreme Christian virtue. So be everybody getting along, everything's okay, that's the most important thing. Well, this doesn't strike me as a nice situation. This is a real Marmite situation, isn't it? People either were for Jesus here or they were against him. I mean, it was an antagonistic situation, and Jesus did not shy away from that. Now, I want to just read a little summary of some work by a lady called Sarah Savage, but do listen to this, because she's done a lot of work with clergy, with church leaders, about this theme of niceness. She's a psychologist and a senior researcher at Cambridge, but I wouldn't hold that against her. So, history suggests that it's not the nicest people who've had the greatest influence for good on the societies with which they have been associated. Successful head teachers, political leaders, matrons, admirals, and fathers, both biological and spiritual, have always had a streak of the hard-nosed disciplinarian about them. In recent times, the gradual but widespread erosion of such people from positions of leadership, not least among the clergy, and their replacement by what psychologists term passive dependence, have established Christians' niceness as being the supreme virtue. Passive dependent does not suggest itself as a term describing such varied Christian heroes as Friar Dolling, Bishop Ryle, who I think Hannah quoted a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Pusey, the Wesleys, or George Whitfield. Each saw himself as a contender for or soldier of Christ. Whilst hindsight suggests they may have got some priorities wrong, none of them supposed that niceness was the supreme Christian value, virtue. Why is that important? I want to tell you a couple of stories, if we could bring up a couple of stories from my home group. Okay, and if any of you, I'd recommend Patrick Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, if you've ever come across this. So two stories in my home group. A few years ago when it first began, there wasn't a lot of trust in the group, quite early days as a group. And if you can remember, every Christmas we do a Christmas carol singing thing. We sing carols on the station and we sing carols around the area. And I thought, our group, it was a Wednesday night, our group should do that. So I said, why don't we all do the Christmas carol singing? We go around some housing in the area, sing carols, hand out leaflets on a Wednesday night. And if you work your way up Lencioni's triangle, there was no conflict about that at all. Everybody nodded. And there wasn't really a lot of commitment to that idea, but nor was there really any indication that people weren't going to do it. So there was a kind of sounds like a good idea type of niceness. It was a nice discussion. And there was no, when I stood here with three other people, one of whom, to their credit, was from my home group, there was no real accountability about, well, where is everybody else? And in fact, when we next met at home group, we all looked down a little bit. Well, there was other stuff on that night, and, you know, I wasn't told. And actually, you know, there weren't many people, the results at the top of the triangle, there weren't many people out there singing those carols, unfortunately, either. So the result wasn't very good. Cycle forward a couple of years, many of the same people still in the home group, praise the Lord. Bit more trust around, though, and we had the discussion about what are we going to do for the big for the breakout Sunday. And somebody suggested, I have to say, from my perspective, rather annoyingly, but it was my wife, that we should decorate somebody's flat, a CAP client's flat. And I have to admit, my heart sank at the thought. And so I said, you know, well. But at least I was honest, because the two things that are on my mind was, you know, first of all, I think it would take quite a lot of time. It's a bigger job than you think. You know, we shouldn't bite off more than we can chew. What happens if people don't? So I brought all that out there. And you'll get a sense by now that I'm not shy in coming forth on some of those issues. So I was quite forthright about, you know, I'm not standing there alone in the middle of the church, you know, singing carols, you know, all by myself. And then, you know, somebody else, I did bring the kind of, and I'm not sure it's really sufficiently evangelistic, because I think it's only one person's flat. Would we really be telling that many people about Jesus? So I brought that argument in as well. But somebody else piped in, they actually thought it would be a great thing for us to do as a home group. They thought it would bind us together. And they said, actually, I'm not sure everything we have to do has to be evangelistic. I think it's just something where we can demonstrate the love of God to somebody. And then a couple of other people piped up as well that they thought we had quite good gifts around decorating as a group. You know, well, we'll see. But so we had a bit of construct, and it went on over a couple of weeks. Somebody, I can see him right now, did immediately declare, I'm not there that weekend. Nathan, do you want to stand up? No. But he was honest. So he was quite clear, he's not going to be there. But lo and behold, good discussion. Everybody turned up. We were, in fact, other people who weren't in our home group turned up and worked very long days. And we did a great job decorating this person's. So conflict there, you know, that nice agreement really is a sign you just not talked about stuff. You just not worked stuff through. So Jesus drove some conflict. It was unpleasant. Now, there are a whole, that you should go on a training course about conflict. I'm just saying that generally a nice atmosphere isn't always a sign that you're really doing the business. So Jesus confronted what was wrong. Then the third thing is he called. So again, if we just look at the passage, he actually, you know, Jesus replied, "Have you never read from the lips of children and infants, Lord? You have called forth your praise." Jesus called and people came. But that's, you know, let's just think about what was the response. Now, this is no offense to the clergy in the room, that particular illustration of a priest. But the reaction of the priests, if you look at it, the word, you know, used is they were indignant about what was going on. So in fact, the very thing we think ought to be going on in a church was happening. You know, the lame and the blind were coming in and they were being healed. And children were running around declaring, God saves. And the priests were indignant. The priests had become hard-hearted and resistant to what the church is meant to do, what the temple is meant to do. And they were indignant. So when the call comes, do you react like that? That you're annoyed that perhaps the glory is going somewhere else? Or do you react, if we could just bring up the next bit, do you react like the children who praise Jesus and, you know, Hosanna, I think you could translate as help, save me. That's what it means, you know, in part what it means is save me. I need help. And they declare, it's the king, it's the son of David, and he's come. So they declare the truth. It is very marked, you know, those two different responses to the call of God. One, a hard-hearted, look at them, do you see what's going on, Jesus, stop it. And then the other, with the response of the children. And I know often we think, you know, that we want to understand complex theology often in the church, and I'm all for that. There are some things where we need, but these were the lame, the blind, and children, and they got it, and they got it fast. And you know what? That woman who led Facebook uses that term about people leaning in, doesn't she? They leant in. And in church, you know, I'd love us to be a church where we lean in. The children just, Jesus called and they came. No delay, and they came full on. You know, Al invited us to worship this morning. You don't all have to do the actions, you know, but lean in. Join in, respond like those children did. So you might hear that, you know, the thought about calling, and you might think, you know, which of those do I identify with either, or do I feel like I fall, you know, somewhere in between? As I was preparing this, if you could bring up the next slide, I had three possible words you might sometimes use to describe your faith and you know, your walk with God at times. You might feel sometimes that actually it's, you know, you get hard-hearted, you know, when a challenge comes your way. And I don't think I'm like the children, believe me. It's very, the longer you've become a Christian, sometimes the riskier it is that actually you do become a bit like the priests. You think you've got the answers. You think you've done the right things. You think that somehow you've contributed something to your salvation. And the risk of that is, you know, sometimes that can lead you to become stressed if you're just doing lots of stuff. You know, you're doing lots of stuff and you become stressed just about how much you've got on, and perhaps that, you know, you need a little bit more help. But sometimes also, you know, I've heard Christians say you can become bored, that actually, you know, you've been doing this a while and it just lacks a bit of zip. It lacks something new. It lacks something vital and lively. And sometimes we can just be lazy. You know, that when the opportunity comes, when a need is called, when another rota comes round or another request for help, you think, no, not me. You know, I just, you know, I'm watching a really important box set at the moment. And that can take priority. And if you look at, so those three things we looked at today, clarity about purpose. Jesus was clear about purpose. He was also he challenged and confronted what he didn't like, and he called. And if you take those last two and put them on this, if you could just add the next bit. If you come when Jesus calls, and if you respond when he challenges you, then I think it pulls you out of avoiding and being distant. Now, I've been haunted recently just by, you know, what's the opposite of come? It's staying, isn't it? And that story of Peter when he denies Jesus, and he denies him three times. It says that he followed him into the courtyard, but he followed him at a distance. We're not to follow Jesus at a distance. The children and the lame and the blind, they pushed in. They got close. So if you come and then you respond to the challenges that Jesus gives, then you'll end up in the top right here, if we could add the final. That's what we're to be as disciples. We get close, we follow his calling, we come, and we take on the challenges that he gives us. And that's what disciples do. And that will help you to avoid being stressed out because you're close to Jesus, bored because you're neither challenged nor close, or lazy because you might feel close. I'm not sure this is possible, but you haven't faced up to some of the challenges he's got for you. So as we enter Passion Week, can I ask the band to come back on? Two ways to respond to that. Firstly, hard-heartedness can lead to you being in any of those lazy, bored, you might feel under-challenged, or stressed kind of brackets. And if you feel hard-hearted, that you just, God isn't reaching you, then take the stone that you were given on the way in today, and as we sing the next song, come forward and put the stone at the foot of the cross as a sign that you like Jesus, to soften your heart, okay, and to break any hard-heartedness. And then secondly, it might be, as you've heard this today, that you've never responded to Jesus' invitation to come. And that is the one thing in life you must do. If Jesus calls us all to come unto him for forgiveness and for new life. That's why he died on a cross. So if that's you, come forward, put your stone here, come find me or anybody else and say you want to come to Jesus this morning.